Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace back with you here on a Friday. And if you're wondering why we do this podcast on Friday now, you know, because today we found out Antonio Brown will not be available, as well as D'Angelo Williams for the Steelers in Sunday's divisional round matchup. That changes a lot.
That and Derek Wolfe signed a four-year extension, too.
Yes.
We'll get to that later. But lots of stuff popping on Friday revolving on the Broncos and the Steelers. And certainly, with Williams, not a surprise at all. Missed last week's game. Hadn't been practicing. Antonio Brown was all about whether he could make it through the league-mandated post-concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. And he did not in time to play in the game, so he's going to sit out. Certainly, I think it proves the validity of the protocol, and I think certainly being under the spotlight as they were for this game, the Steelers were going to take this very seriously, and they were going to follow it to the letter of the rule of how it's supposed to be administered. And so, no Antonio Brown. It's a tough break for the Steelers, and I think also, frankly, some Broncos are disappointed they're not going to face Antonio Brown either.
Yeah, Bradley Roby today talked about how on Thursday night he stayed up watching a bunch of Antonio Brown film. They got in this morning, watched a little bit of the TV, and found out that he would not be playing, and he was definitely a little bit disappointed about not having that kind of competition against mm-hmm. one of the, if not the best wide receiver in the game right now.
Yeah, and I think it's not just the competition, it's also wanting to atone for what happened on December 20th that Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger and his receivers shredded the Broncos no-fly zone in a way that no one else did in 2015. So they wanted to get a measure of revenge. They wanted to show that they weren't the defensive backfield that got shredded. Certainly, personnel-wise, the Broncos were going to be in better shape going into the game because they're going to have their two starting safeties, which they did not have back in their Week 15 game. But now, if the Broncos' defense does do well against the Steelers, I think some will put an asterisk on that, but so it goes. I mean, you can argue that some of the Steelers' success last month was a result of having Darian Stewart sidelined, T.J. Ward sidelined, David Bruton Jr. playing the game on one leg, as it turned out, and Omar Bolden sidelined, the Broncos having to play a good chunk of the game with Josh Bush and Shiloh Kao at safety when they needed two healthy safeties after, especially with Bruton struggling with a leg injury.
I mean, if you want to put asterisks on everything, that's someone's call. But
the whole season should have an asterisk for the Broncos because they played it without a Pro Bowl left tackle. I mean, we can if we take it to its logical conclusion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you have a first round bye, maybe you don't have to worry about some of those things.
Yeah.
If you'd gotten that, then anyway, we digress. The Broncos are healthier than they've been in a while. Everyone practiced on Friday, and only Brock Osweiler is questionable. Everyone else is probable for the game. So you could see Omar Bolden back returning punts. You could see starting safeties back together, though you did see that last time, even if Darian Stewart left pretty early.
And they'll watch that hamstring closely, I think, going forward. Although he said it wasn't as bad as it appeared, that it was a scar tissue issue that came up when he had the aggravation of it back in the Chargers game. He thinks he's good to go. He said that particular issue, the scar tissue, wasn't as serious as what he dealt with in December. Mm-hmm. So he's pretty confident that he's going to be good to go. Chris Harris Jr., he's got the shoulder injury. He's had some ice on his shoulder, a wrap on his shoulder from time to time, but he practiced all week. He's good to go. And, he's a tough son of a gun. I think he'll be fine.
Another tough summer again. We haven't even talked about Ben Roethlisberger mm-hmm. with torn ligaments in his throwing arm shoulder, his right shoulder. And I think he was listed as full practice today on Friday.
Yes, he was.
Despite not practicing earlier this week. And that just kind of shows you the toughness of that guy. We've seen him play through plenty of injuries before, and he said he'd rather have one anywhere but on his throwing shoulder. And we kind of saw that at the end of last game as he mm-hmm. tried to lead the Steelers down the field.
Yes, and it's going to be interesting to see just what he can do in terms of taking deep shots to, you know, to force the defense to play back a little bit and create some openings underneath. Now, Martavis Bryant, he can make some plays downfield.
I don't know how you defend a front flip catch, but that apparently is in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. we'll see what's next, but he's still got two good receivers, Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton.
They have a very deep receiving core.
Yes. Darius Hayward Bay will play more. Bryant's interesting because, and Bradley Roby touched on this on Friday, different type of receiver than Antonio Brown. You had to keep Tlaib on him quite a bit in the game game back in week 15 because you wanted the bigger cornerback on Bryant. And, Bryant is 6'4", 211 pounds, 32 and 5/8 inch arms. So he's got a lot of reach, very athletic, as we've seen. Is capable of making some catches that are going to be on a highlight reel. And then Wheaton can make some of the same plays underneath and can make guys miss in the same way that Antonio Brown did. So they're still very dangerous and very deep at wide receiver.
Even running back, they got some good production. Talking about Williams being out. They got some solid production from Fitzgerald Toussaint.
What a beautiful name that is.
And Todman. I forget his first name. Not as beautiful a name, but...
They ran the ball as well as they have all year. I mean, you had Toussaint coming off the practice squad, and part of that just goes to show that the key to any running game is up front. Mm-hmm. And Pittsburgh's offensive line did very well in the run-blocking game against Cincinnati's front. Some struggles in pass protection, of course, and all you have to do is look at how Ben Roethlisberger was getting hit.
Yes.
As evidence of that, Cincinnati has an elite pass rush, just as the Broncos have an elite pass rush. So it'll be interesting to see if the Steelers try to set things up on the ground and try to dictate the tempo that way. Because they had some early attempts at getting the ground game going back in week 15. D'Angelo Williams had the touchdown hit, and they had a couple of nice plays early. But after that, absolutely no room to roam on the ground to the point where the Steelers really just went away from the running game entirely. The Broncos succeeded at making the Steelers one-dimensional, but that one dimension was on point and enough to beat them. So if the Broncos can take the ground game out of commission for the Steelers this time, then you're leaning on a dimension that has an injured quarterback, is minus Antonio Brown. Although the other receivers are dangerous, They're going to be playing with a little bit of a, maybe not the whole hand tied behind its back, but maybe having a couple, two or three fingers tied together. It might get difficult for them in that case.
What's interesting, when I look back at that Week 15 game, one of the guys who really stood out to me was Malik Jackson. He drew three holding calls and he got two sacks in spite of being held on both of those. Mm-hmm. And how he does against the interior of that line is definitely going to be key. And then you have Derek Wolfe on the other side, who just got his payday.
And you'll have your first team safeties there getting involved in the running game as well. Don't forget they were shutting down the ground game without Darren Stewart, and especially without T.J. Ward. He's so crucial in being that extra thumper against the run. And the Broncos were able to shut the Steelers' ground game down without them. What will they do with him? It's empirically, the Broncos do have a lot of advantages going into this game. Of course, that being said, as Rich Eisen pointed out today of NFL on Eisen of NFL Network, the last time a team played in the divisional round without its leading receiver and its leading rusher was...
Now, that's with available. Is that available leading receiver? Because I have to think that some teams have been without, someone who's on the IR as a leading rusher.
But available, I think
has D'Angelo surpassed Le'Veon?
He did.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so without their leading rusher and leading receiver, it was December 1979, and the Oilers played not only with Ken Burrow was briefly available and then left, and then Earl Campbell, the Hall of Fame running back, didn't play, and Dan Pastorini, the quarterback, didn't play. and those Oilers still managed to upset the Chargers 17-14. Dan Fouts, another Hall of Famer, had the worst game of his career, intercepted five times, four by Vernon Perry. And a member of the Broncos coaching staff was there for that game. Wade Phillips was an assistant coach for the Oilers at the time. So, you know, he was on the positive side of that, but I'm sure he's going to remind his players, look, just because they're without key guys, it doesn't mean they can't beat you. I mean, this is the postseason. Guys come out of nowhere and have the games of their lives. We see it happen every year. So, yes, the Broncos on paper have a lot of advantages going into this game. But if people start assuming that the Steelers' offense lacks firepower because it doesn't have Brown, it doesn't have D'Angelo Williams, and then beyond that, of course, doesn't have Le'Veon Bell as well because he's out for the year, they're sorely mistaken. This offense is still capable of making some plays.
In the same vein as that. So I was doing one of the stories this week about the amount of veteran leadership on this team and yet how much they're relying some on young guys, first-year rookies, those kind of guys. I was trying to get the theme of what changes between regular season and postseason football. And you always hear it's the speed of the game. And it's like, well, guys, you can't rationally think that guys are just magically getting faster. Mm-hmm. So is it that the speed that at which you need to react to adjust, that is what gets you must get faster at?
A little bit,
things can slip much more easily.
Yeah, they can slip much more easily. The margin for error is virtually nil.
Yes.
Anticipation is key. That's why veteran guys, even if they lost a step in terms of raw foot speed late in their careers, if they made it up on the mental side, then they could still be very effective. I think back to a guy like John Lynch, who by the time he got to Denver, yeah, he lost a step or two in terms of straight line speed, but he was still able to make plays because his reaction time was still exquisitely fast. And, you know, to go back to the 2005 AFC Championship held here a decade ago, I mean, he's right there in position with a shot and a play that nearly ended in an interception but ended up being a reception for the Steelers. Could have been a play that turned the game the other direction immediately from the start, but didn't happen. But that's the kind of play that he was able to make and set up because he did have that reaction time.
Well, the game is on Sunday, 2:40, Mountain Time, obviously. I'm sure everyone will be there. We've got to make sure to keep all those terrible towels out.
Yeah, everyone will be watching. I mean, I'm sure more people would love to be there than can actually be there. But, yes, as you mentioned, keep the terrible towels out. This is our time to remind you, if you're listening, please don't sell your ticket. And if you do, sell it to a Broncos fan.
Yes.
Because, and John Lynch even mentioned it this week, a decade ago, when it's the AFC Championship, and the Broncos walk in and they see all these terrible towels. Now, I'm not saying that Pittsburgh fans took over the place, okay? It was probably maybe 5,000 of the 76,000-plus on hand. But those towels, it's a striking visual, and you can't ignore them. And, you know, credit to Pittsburgh for having one of the most rabid and engaged and enthusiastic fan bases in the league, but it's up to y'all that are coming out to the game or making sure that your tickets end up in the hands of Broncos fans to create that home field advantage. And something less than that, frankly, dilutes the accomplishment of what the players earned over the course of the season in going 12-4 and getting the number one seed. If you walk into the home stadium and you see 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans for the opposing team, then what were you fighting for over the course of the year? Mm-hmm. Just a chance to not take a round-trip flight in the middle of January?
Yeah.
To be in your locker room as opposed to another locker room, you know, all of a sudden doesn't seem like that much. So, yes, hang on to your tickets or sell them to Bronco fans. Make sure that this is a true home game for your Denver Broncos and not something else entirely.
I tell you, when I was at the Hall of Fame this summer for the it was for Tom Jackson receiving a broadcasting award, but I was at the ceremony, and obviously Jerome Bettis was being inducted. And the number of fans that were in that stadium, it's like this high school stadium,
yep.
And they all had towels. It was rather impressive. So we don't want to that.
They do know how to bring it. It's Steeler Nation is worldwide. Of course, I mean, there's Bronco fans everywhere as well, but the Steelers, the Packers, I find it interesting that they have such large fan bases in all corners of the country. And here's our Charlotte moment. So if you don't like our Charlotte, North Carolina references in the podcast, just fast forward through and come back in a couple of minutes. But Swanee and I have both lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I have been to a Steelers-Panthers game at Bank of America Stadium.
Steelers are the home team in those
yes,
games.
Yes. I think there are more people from Western PA in North Carolina than Western PA. It certainly seems that way.
Now, my mother is from Pennsylvania.
Western Pennsylvania? Or
she's from State College. Yeah. Kind of in the middle.
It's in the middle. Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that has been the case. There's a lot of, Charlotte's kind of infamous for their number of out-of-towners who've come in.
But it's interesting.
Buffalo.
Buffalo as well. If these places were so great, why did you leave? I joke, my wife is from Wisconsin, and I joke with her that Wisconsin, and I like Wisconsin, I enjoy visiting Wisconsin, but my joke with her is, yeah, Wisconsin appears to be a great place to be from because so many of y'all leave. And you're everywhere. I think it's the same for Western Pennsylvania. People from there are everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Primanti Brothers, we had an awesome meal there in Pittsburgh. I can get it in Fort Lauderdale.
Well,
and I have. It's been delicious.
Moving onward, we did kind of slip into a little off topic when we haven't even gotten to Derek Wolfe's new contract extension.
Yeah. 4 years.
Big moment for a guy who if you know much about him, definitely not an easy path to get where he is now. And especially when you think about just his NFL career. You can go back to when he grew up in rural Ohio?
Yeah.
And
around Youngstown, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the NFL, he suffered a nasty neck injury, mm-hmm. some nerve damage. And what was it on the bus? He collapsed on the bus.
He had the injury in Seattle in the preseason two mm-hmm. years ago. And he recovered, and he was well enough to play, but clearly you watched him that year, and he wasn't himself.
He couldn't keep weight.
Couldn't keep weight on. He was getting beat much more often than he was as a rookie. And then the team is on its buses going to the airport to head to Kansas City for a big game, and then he collapsed and seized up and had a seizure on the bus and had to get taken to the mm-hmm. to the hospital, and that basically ended his season. He lost even more weight, and I remember seeing him on the field at Super Bowl 48 pregame. He joined his teammates there, and he looked gaunt. I mean, he had lost, I think he ended up losing like 30-35 pounds. Mm. I mean, just looked gaunt and almost ghostly. It was really a sobering sight, but he got healthy. He put that weight back on. He came back stronger. He played well in 2013, coming back from all that, or 2014, coming back from all that, and then this year has been dominant. He had the four-game suspension for a violation of the PED policy the start of the year, vowed that he would come back better, angrier, wouldn't repeat that mistake, and he's played the best ball of his career. I think Pro Football Focus has him rated fourth among 3-4 defensive ends since he came back in week 5. He's always been, even when he was struggling, he was a good run defender, but he's become a better pass rusher. You see him with that bull rush. He's so strong, he's able to put an opposing guard, you know, on skates, almost, you know, push him back in the backfield, push him back into the quarterback. Tremendous season. And the other thing, you look at that contract, it's $36.7 million over 4 years. Mm-hmm. Good three technique ends are getting pricey. We saw that with Mike Daniels in Green Bay when he re-signed. He was a $10 million plus per year. Wolf isn't quite in that category, but it tells you, You know, that if you've got one of those guys, it's going to take some money to keep them. And, you know, the Broncos have a lot of priorities on their offseason to-do list coming up. They've got a lot of guys to re-sign. You know, they'd love to have Malik Jackson back, their other strong three-technique guy. But as we see with the price tag for Wolf, as we see with the price tag for Mike Daniels in Green Bay, if they can get Malik back, it's not going to be cheap.
Yep. Simple as that. I do like how I remember asking Von Miller about what he expected from Derek when he was going to come back. And Von said, I think you're going to see a new Derek Wolfe.
He was right.
And he was right. He said that he had been working on a lot of new things, a lot of different technique, a lot of hand moves, head fakes, things like that. And I think we're seeing the production.
A lot of that is Bill Kolar. Kolar's done a tremendous job with him.
Oh, Derek loves Kolar.
They are on the same really page, the same wavelength. Well, they're the same kind of intense guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the same kind of no BS guys.
Yeah.
You know, if we were podcasting on another site, I might have said the actual word. Especially because Bill Kolar does love to use colorful metaphors from time to time.
That's not a metaphor. That's just.
Well, no, but that's a term from Star Trek IV.
Oh, okay.
Talking about profanities, and Spock says, the language, they're back in 1986, they've traveled through time. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. And Spock says, yeah, the language is laced with more, shall I say, colorful metaphors. And then Kirk says, oh, the profanity, just the way they talk here.
So here's a question, as we can get a little bit off topic.
Yes.
Von Miller, taken down by mozzarella cheese sticks at a movie theater, watching Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And as he walked off, I asked him what he thought of the movie. He's like, oh, it's good, but I fell asleep.
Well, if he was nauseated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not nauseous, but nauseated.
Yeah.
Right. I know that, but sometimes I have to clear it. I think we all struggle with that in our minds from time to time. When I get nauseated, I get sleepy.
I can see that. It's better to. I feel better when I go to sleep. If I'm nauseated.
Yeah. Now sometimes obviously. I can't actually get to sleep, but when I am nauseated, I do feel sleepy. So I think Von Miller is when he says, "Yeah,
hopefully
it was a good movie, but I fell asleep." That's if he had bad mozzarella sticks and he felt like he was going to throw up, then that is right on. That is completely accurate. And I would say the moral of the story is, don't order the mozzarella sticks, but. At the same time, I've had some good meals at movie houses. The Alamo Draft House, in particular, down in Littleton, it's my favorite theater in the Denver area. And I don't think Von Miller went there for his meal. I've had some great meals there. There's a green chili burger that I love to have when I'm watching a movie. And
I think if you're going to a movie theater that has mozzarella sticks, it's probably going to be close to like mozzarella sticks they have at your local 7-Eleven or Circle K, depending on what side of the country you're listening
I think it was a theater where he just went up to the counter and said, I'll have mozzarella sticks, not one where that like the Draft House or there's a theater over in South Glen.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all Denverites who are listening to this podcast know what we're talking about.
They have a kitchen.
Yes.
That's the important thing.
They have a kitchen that has health inspectors come in from time to time. I'm not sure about the kitchen at your regular average movie theater where they're just serving popcorn and mozzarella sticks and a hot dog,
that the butter they use in popcorn at normal movie theaters is antibacterial anyway. So
yeah, well, I'm not sure there's anything resembling butter in that butter,
but it tastes good.
Or like the hot. Remember on Seinfeld when Kramer gets involved with the old theater, the Alex, and they have a hot dog, and it's shriveled up, and the kid behind the counter says, "That's been here since the silent era," and Kramer insists on eating it because Lloyd Braun, who's gone crazy after his after tanking the Dinkins for mayor campaign, he returns a year later, looks very different because of course a different actor playing him by then. And anyway, Lloyd wants the hot dog, and the guy behind the counter says, "Well, yeah, it's been here since the silent era." And then Kramer's defending his new friend Lloyd Braun. No, no, you're not crazy. One hot dog, and he takes a bite. It's perfectly sane food to eat. Interesting texture. And then he throws up.
Have you ever eaten anything like cooked from a gas station or something?
No, I've had.
My brother has once.
I
don't think he'd endorse it.
No, I have. I never really was tempted.
No offense to the fine proprietors of gas stations nationwide.
They're doing their best with the equipment they have and the setup they have. It's, I'm not saying that you go to a gas station or a convenience store and it's like Apu picking up the hot dog off the floor and there's hair and ants crawling all over it and everything, and makes poor Homer sick, and then he goes back and complains about it and says, complains about getting sick from Apu's meat, and Apu says, I'm sorry, here is a five-pound bucket of shrimp, of frozen shrimp. This shrimp isn't frozen. And it smells funny. Okay, 10 pounds. Woohoo!
I think my favorite Homer sick eating is the 10-foot sandwich.
Oh, yes.
That one's great. That's the
How can I stay mad at you? I think he says at one point, 3 more feet and I can fit it in the fridge. The sandwich is turning purple. And he gets sick. Poor guy.
However, I have had some of the best Slim Jims of my life from gas stations. So.
But they're not cooked. I think the key is you don't want anything from a gas station that is prepared.
Oh, for sure.
Stick to the candy, the packaged
stuff. If it's wrapped,
stuff.
It's good.
Yeah, like
If it's vacuum sealed.
I think it's noble that I see some convenience stores trying to have fruit. And actually, at a local convenience store recently, I was a little bit hungry, and I was tempted to have an apple. Tempted by an apple, that's kind of biblical.
Oh, I just remembered a story that I read today.
Yes.
It's about the surging number of shacks in professional sports. Early in the 90s, Shaquille O'Neal, when he burst on the scene as an All-American at LSU and eventually had some great years in Orlando for going to the Lakers. Early on, people flocked to using his name for their children.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're beginning to see the emergence, the eruption of Shaqs once again.
Mm-hmm.
We have one here on the Broncos,
yes.
Shaq Barrett. There is one on the Patriots, Shaq Mason, in week 11, 10? I don't remember. Anyway, when the Broncos played the Patriots, Shaq Mason, offensive lineman, faced Shaq Barrett, outside linebacker.
Right.
Now, this story, it's on Vice Sports. This story talks to both of them, and it talks to Shaq Barrett's dad, and Shaq Barrett's dad confirmed that Shaquille is named after Shaquille O'Neal. Basically because he liked the name. He's a big basketball fan.
It's a good name.
And I don't know if you're aware of Shaq Barrett's middle name, Akeem, A-K-E-E-M.
So old school, not Hakeem.
It is
which
Akeem.
Eventually, which of course, Olajuwon was Akeem and then added the H at the beginning of his first name.
So his father named his son after his two favorite NBA centers, Shaquille. Akeem Shaquille Akeem Barrett. Now, Shaq Mason, other side of the field.
Yeah.
His middle name is Olajuwon.
What?
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's incredible. Oh.
The only thing that would have been better is if, well, not better, it would have been just as good. If Mason's middle name were another great center of that era right around there. If it were like Shaquille Kareem. Although he didn't...
He was on his way out at that
point. He was on his way out in 89, but he was the same. He intersected with Olajuwon.
Right.
Better that than, say, Shaquille Duckworth. Cartwright.
Sabonis.
Cartwright.
Oh, yeah, Cartwright's a good one.
Robert Parrish was still kicking around then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he lasted another few years.
Joe Barely Cares, a.k.a. Joe Barry Carroll, was gone by then.
I haven't heard that.
Alonzo Mourning was in the NBA by then. That would have been a good choice.
Just starting out. It was the Hornets' 1992 pick, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been a good one.
David Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
But in that case, wouldn't you have had to use the nickname? So it would have been Shaquille Admiral Mason.
That's a nice.
Admiral?
That's a great middle name.
That is. Huh. And then you've got the acronym is SAM. Shaquille Admiral.
Is that his? Well, if he were a linebacker, that'd be even more incredible.
Yeah.
I guess not everything works out so perfectly.
No, it that's beautiful. Did someone get a picture of the two Shaqs? I hope so. I hope that was the case somewhere.
I don't see it. Oh, yeah. I don't know if they got them together.
Well, if
there's also Shaq Thompson for another Carolina reference. So you got some guys roaming around.
I think there's a couple of Shaqs coming up in this year's draft too. That's the thing. We see that echo. Example.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN did a story, I believe it was last year,
on
all the patents in Indiana. And I imagine that in 12, 13, 14 years or so, we're going to see a lot of patents playing, you know, patents in high school here in Colorado.
Well, I'm sure. Now, the thing about Shaq in the story, Shaquille peaked in 1993, which is odd because his best years were obviously around the turn of the century.
Yeah, but that was the thing is though.
He was
great right out of the gates. And
oh, yes.
Although he had his best years in LA, he was a phenomenon when he went to Orlando. Now, I lived in Tampa just down the road. So I admit I had a more close-up view of this than most. We used to go to we used to drive over to a few Magic games every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a firsthand view of this, but it just seemed like, to me, like Shaq Mania really was something off the charts
Kazam
in 1993.
Perfect example.
Well, Kazam was actually right about the time he went to L.A.
But that is that. And then he had multiple rap albums.
Shaq Fu,
yeah.
And then he left for L.A.
Well, so
traitor. Yeah, I said it. Sorry, all you Shaq fans. Traitor.
Oh, well, they're still rabid, I'm sure, at this point.
That shouldn't have bothered me as much as it did.
You know, if he had just went to Phoenix before L.A., he would have gone clockwise around the country.
That's right.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't retire. Like, as you know, usually some these franchise guys usually they retire as like this feels weird to say, as a Magic,
a magician,
as a magician.
Well, I guess it's better than if you're a Heat. What are you, a Hot?
Hot.
If you were the Heat, I'm a Hot. I'm a Hot for the Heat. I'm Hot for the Heat.
Instead, he retires a Celtic, I think. Anyway,
the uniforms of Shaquille O'Neal. That sounds like a good project.
Oh, yeah. You can make a little poster out of it. Shaq Barrett, his father says, if he was born 5 years later, he would be named Kobe.
Kobe Barrett. I like Shaq better.
Shaq is
a better football name. Shaq is more intimidating than Kobe. I mean, Kobe, the problem with Kobe is I think of Kobe beef. I'm eating Kobe beef.
I don't think of Kobe beef. I just think of Kobe Bryant.
At Sushi Den, there's a Kobe beef roll that I always order when I go there. It's tremendous. If you're ever over at Sushi Den on South Pearl, Platte Park neighborhood of Denver, I recommend it. Even though, yeah, the fish is awesome there, but I recommend this. It's really good. But, yeah, I think of Kobe beef. I think of that, or I think of, like, there's a couple of restaurants where you can get a Kobe beef burger. I think of just a side of beef on my plate. I don't think of it doesn't intimidate me. It's like why you don't see teams called the Cows.
Sure.
Except on South Park. And I think that's part of the joke. What's the meekest animal that we could think of to be our mascot. Especially, I think the Middle Park is the Cowboys, right? Middle Park Cowboys and the South Park Cows.
I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Yeah.
When I think of Shaq, this is weird. For those who, like me, had Sports Illustrated for Kids coming to their house every week or two, or however often it came, during Halloween, or around then, they had these trading cards. They have trading cards in every issue, but in October, they had Halloween cards where they would take players and kind of do a drawing of their likeness into what their name can be made into a pun into. So Shaq was a literal Shaq.
Oh, man.
And that is what I think of. I think of Shaq as a Shaq.
A big Shaq in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty great.
Love Shaq.
Love Shaq. A little love place. Where... Yeah. Oh, I gotta love the
B-52s. Oh, my gosh. How can we mention music on the show without at least a brief tribute to David Bowie?
Ooh.
Passed away this week.
What's your favorite?
I think Space Oddity is one of the greatest compositions in rock
Oddity.
History. That's the one. I mean, it's hard to choose one, but that's the one that's always my go-to.
Now, I grew up with a cassette of Aladdin Sane.
Yeah.
So one of my favorites is the first track. I think it's the first track, if I remember correctly. First track, which is Panic in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
Just rock song. Always pump me up.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, I'm sure there's going to be some David Bowie played at every stadium this weekend where there's an NFL game. So which ones are they going to choose? What does the situation call for? I'm sure in New England they will Space Oddity. And in fact, at the Broncos Patriots playoff game in January of 2012, it's cold, it's about 24 degrees, feels like it's about zero. And Tom Brady comes out on the field, and there's not many people in the stands because it's so cold and everyone's really huddling. They're going to go to their seats at the last possible minute. So the stadium's empty, sound is echoing, and he comes out, and you hear the few fans in there cheering, and you hear the opening bars of Space Oddity comes up so gradually, volume picks up, ground, and then you get to the lyrics, ground control to Major Tom. It was just... So it was kind of that eerie, wonderful moment. It's what I remember telling a friend at the time is that I have literally heard this song since I was 3 or 4 years old, and here it is, like 30 years later, and it still sounds fresh and creates a new memory in a different environment. That's to me a sign of a great song, that you can put it in, like, you can hear it many years down the line in a certain situation. It just evokes so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to overlook the man's acting work as well.
Oh, Labyrinth.
Labyrinth played, of course, he played a Nikola Tesla decade ago. And if you're of
the prestige.
And if you're of my generation, I'm going to say specifically, like, if you're like a 36 to 44-year-old heterosexual male who, in his teen years, your parents had HBO on cable, then you probably have fond memories of a show called Dream On, because it was a sitcom where there was gratuitous nudity and cursing like crazy. And 15-year-old Mace loved that show. And David Bowie was the guest star, because there were some heavy hitters that were behind the show. It was produced by the people that ended up producing Friends.
Hmm.
John Landis was a executive producer, and he directed some episodes. And there was one where they were making a movie about the main character's ex-wife's new husband, who was never shown on the show, but was this perfect guy named Dr. Richard Stone, who could cure cancer and could be the Surgeon General, could be a Supreme Court, just basically it was kind of like there were like a little bit like Lilith on Frasier. You couldn't show this person because no one could possibly have all these characteristics.
Oh, It's not Lilith.
Or not Lilith. Maris. Thank you, Maris. Lilith, yeah. We saw way all too much. Pardon me. Anyway, Maris. So, like, their version of Maris.
Right.
Anyway, so the premise of this episode is that they're making a movie on this guy's life, a biopic. And David Bowie plays the director, Sir Roland Moorcock.
Oh, God.
And it's just this vain, arrogant, pompous, you know, pompous person who just who insults everybody around him and just stole every scene. I mean, he's basically playing a jerk version of himself because, by all accounts, David Bowie was a very nice guy.
Yes.
But that I have that DVD and I went back and I watched it this week. I could remember, and I hadn't seen it in years. I mean, I remember the character's name. I mean, how can you forget a name like that?
Right.
And again, 15-year-old me loved it.
Now, a David Bowie song for the Broncos and Steelers, perhaps we go with Changes for all that's going to be changed.
You can go with Changes. You hope that by the end of the game, you're talking about Heroes, just for one day. Great song.
Start the game. How about Let's Dance?
I think that's, you know what? I don't think that song is played enough at Stains. I think that's a perfect opening to the game right there. Put on your reg shoes and dance the blues. I had a girlfriend in college that was very fond of that song. Mm. And I was very fond of it, too. That was actually one of the things that first got us dating each other. Was talking about that. Believe it or not, I'm serious. We bonded over David Bowie. That is a totally pretentious college thing to do, is bond over music, you know? Over a song.
Sure.
Over a song that at that point was 12 years old.
There are much more pretentious things to bond over.
I suppose. But that's just, I look back at that, and we didn't have anything else in common. We really liked that song.
A lifelong friendship.
Yeah, no, I don't even know where the heck she is now. She's one of the exes that was that's been lost in the ether.
Oh, well. The life before Facebook.
Yeah. See, now I can find out where they've gone.
Don't do it.
Oh, I have. I'm not proud of myself, but I have. Although, sometimes you learn things about exes, and you realize it wasn't meant to be. Well, and this will be my vignette to sign off on. I observe that an ex-girlfriend of mine is now a Donald Trump supporter.
Ooh, good riddance.
And I thought to myself, yeah, if we had stayed together, I think something would have been a fissure. There would have been a political discussion that would have caused a fissure in the relationship, and it wouldn't have worked out.
You wouldn't have gotten that far.
Yeah, if I knew she supported Donald Trump. So some things are for the best.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll go ahead and finish off this podcast. We look forward to hopefully coming back to you next week in anticipation of another game.
Yeah, we're doing this podcast regardless, but...
Yes, but hopefully it'll be in...
We hope we're talking Patriots or Chiefs coming to Denver. And,
knock on wood.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Don't root for either. You don't want to get in that. You don't know if the Broncos are going to be in the game by the time the Patriots and Chiefs play on Saturday. And B, I'm convinced. I believe in karma. It's bad karma to root for one team over another.
All right. Well, there you go. See you all in a week.
See ya.